As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello and welcome to Straight Outta Cobham, the Chelsea FC podcast from The Athletic. Each week we bring you the very best Blues coverage as provided by The Athletic's Chelsea experts. On this episode we're discussing the fallout from Project Big Picture, rounding up the international Blues news, particularly regarding those involved with England on Wednesday. We'll also look ahead to this weekend's game against Southampton, the return of the Champions League and more. Available for free everywhere and ad-free via The Athletic app, this is Straight Outta Cobham. Yes, welcome in, listener. Thanks for being with us. I'm Matt Davis-Adams, in the company of The Athletic's three wise men as regards Chelsea Football Club, if nothing else. Simon Johnson is with us. Hi, Simon.
Hello.
So too Dominic Fifield. Hi, Dom.
Hey, how you doing?
Very well, thank you. And it wouldn't be an SOC without to me. That's Liam. Hello, Liam.
Oh, nice. I can't wait for the actual football to start.
Right, we're going to start today by discussing the short-lived idea that was Project Big Picture and what it did slash would have meant for Chelsea. It was on Sunday of last week that the news broke of the plan to save English football or kill it once and for all, depending on your perspective. The proposals tied together under the name Project Big Picture, led by Liverpool and Manchester United, included a £250 million bailout for the financially stricken EFL, with them getting a 25% cut of all future TV deals. However, it would also have seen more power transferred to the so-called Big Six clubs in the Premier League, of which Chelsea are one. The Premier League itself weren't keen and at an emergency meeting of its shareholders on Wednesday rejected the proposal. Instead, the aim is for all 20 Premier League clubs to devise a plan for future structures and financing of English football and in the short term offer financial assistance to struggling clubs in League One and Two in the shape of grants and loans worth £50 million. Big explainer on The Athletic now, which I would encourage listeners to read for the full picture. We've had a tweet from Annie asking, can you explain Chelsea's position on Project Big Picture more clearly? Dom, they were kind of in the shadows on this one. What's the view from the club? What was it before the report was released and thereafter to the reaction to it?
It was Rick Parry who actually suggested that Bruce Buck had been quite heavily involved in the drawing up of the plans for Project Big Picture. I mean, not as much as Manchester United and Liverpool, clearly, but the implication was that there'd been some kind of level of discussion really since the plot was hatched, the plan was hatched back in, I think it was 2017. Chelsea distanced themselves from it quite swiftly on Sunday. And I wonder whether that's partly because they probably realised that there was very little chance of this being picked up by the rest of the Premier League. I mean, Turkey's voting for Christmas and all that. They were never going to get the 14 votes required when the Premier League met as a body to clear these plans. If nothing else, it has brought the whole issue into the public eye and put a lot more emphasis and responsibility on the Premier League clubs to come up with some kind of rescue package, some kind of restructuring of the game financially in this country. And, you know, the onus is very much on them to produce something now in the weeks ahead before the EFL really well, is crippled by the implications of COVID-19. Now, this was clearly going to, if it had been passed through, it would have benefited Chelsea because they would have been one of those six clubs that basically had power of veto over virtually anything in the division. They were going to, there was all this stuff about how it was actually nine clubs. They were going to include West Ham, Southampton and Everton, but they needed a two-third majority. So as long as the big six voted in favour of any proposal or voted to veto anything, then that's what was going to happen. And look, Chelsea, I'm sure Chelsea probably want a greater share of international television right money. I suspect they feel as if the big six deserve more because they generate the most revenues in terms of and the most interest around the globe. But look, personally speaking, thankfully it didn't go through, and hopefully they come up with something slightly fairer when it comes to the competitiveness of the top division in the weeks ahead.
Simon, it's interesting because the general reception to it seems to have been, oh, this is appalling. However, there are quite a few good ideas. I guess if nothing else, it's forced the Premier League and to a lesser extent, a far lesser extent, the government into action to actually doing something to help these EFL clubs who desperately need the help. You know, you wonder if that would have been forthcoming had this proposal not been put out there first.
Yeah, I mean, it's the one positive I think you can take from what's been proposed is at least there's a conversation. What I don't understand is why Premier League clubs have sort of come out and not exactly been too willing to help by the sounds of it until now. And then this project gets proposed with all these provisos, these things in exchange for the investment. I think that's what really stinks about this is why couldn't they just be offering this these kind of things anyway? I mean, obviously, in a naive world, you get nothing for free in this world. I liked some of the proposals I like. For example, was the dropping of the parachute payments, but making it a 25% annual contribution from the Premier League revenue. I thought that was a really good idea and one that I hope can be pursued, regardless of what's in exchange for it.
Liam, do you think this is just another step towards a European Super League eventually being formed? And is that something that Chelsea supporters will actually want?
Is it something that supporters as a whole will want? I don't know if we're heading on kind of a linear track towards a European Super League, but it does seem pretty clear at this point that we're heading towards a sort of coordinated effort to consolidate the power of the existing elite clubs. And Chelsea are part of that. You know, as much as all of these clubs distance themselves from ideas they know are doomed to fail, every time something like this comes up, it's pretty much all the elite European clubs have talked about it to some degree. And I think the 2024-2025 season is regarded as a big sort of tipping point. That's when the Champions League structure becomes up for negotiation again, and the thinking in football is that the elite clubs are going to push for that competition to be expanded. Another thing I think that supporters won't really want, because as things are right now, the group stage can be a bit of a snooze fest, but that was part of this Premier League plan, wasn't it, that by reducing the number of teams in the Premier League and by basically culling the League Cup, you could create more dates for a potentially expanded Champions League. But it's all going the way of the elite European clubs consolidating and gathering more power for themselves. And I don't think really long term that's good for the sport, regardless of whether or not it leads directly to a European Super League.
It should be said that the Chelsea Supporters Trust came out and in against the proposals, along with the other five big clubs, the supporters trust from them. So it would appear that those particular plans had not attracted the interest or piqued the interest of the supporters. They saw indeed the bigger picture as opposed to the project big picture, and were going to resist it as much as they could. And no one's kidding ourselves. I mean, unfortunately, fans don't have the power that we would all like fans to have, but there was a groundswell against the plans when it came out on Sunday.
Project Big Picture then kicked into the long grass. It seems change is afoot there. The Athletic, of course, is the best place to keep up with any new developments. Okay, next today, we'll round up how Chelsea's international players fared for their countries over the break. As usual, plenty of international action for the bulk of Chelsea's first team squad over the past fortnight. We won't go through it all. We'll talk some of the highlights, though. Starting with England, Reece James made his debut as a sub against Wales, came off the bench against Belgium before earning his first start and impressing during the game, at least, in Wednesday's 1-0 defeat against Andreas Christensen's Denmark. He soured that by getting sent off for confronting the ref after the final whistle. Mason Mount hit the winner in the weekend game against Belgium and nearly equalised on Tuesday. Simon, you've written about Mason Mount. He's somebody we've been talking for a number of weeks on this podcast, and the perception of him by supporters as opposed to by managers, and you've looked at that not just from a Chelsea perspective.
Well, no, because as I sort of went logged onto Twitter, as I do on a daily basis, I just saw his name was trending during the international break, and once again, it wasn't for positive reasons. It just prompted me to write something because he gets it a lot of stick from a section of Chelsea fans on Twitter and other various social networks, etc. And here he was getting it whilst away with England as well. And I just found it all a bit baffling, really, because, you know, whether you rate him as a player or not, it's the extent of the abuse that he gets that baffles me. You might not like him as a player, but, you know, he's one of the nicest kids you could ever wish to meet. All he wants to do is play football, and he certainly doesn't deserve that kind of poison in his life. So I just thought I'd examine the sort of why is he disliked. You know, is there any justifiable reason? Because it seems to me the only crime he's guilty of is being selected a lot by his two managers for club and country. And he's kind of being sucked into the dislike, again, from the same people of the managers. And it's almost like got this sort of teacher's pet kind of vibe going on, when actually he's still a very good footballer. So anyway, it just prompted me to write something and perhaps raise the question that you might not want him in the team, but perhaps think about how you express yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Liam, as for that red card for Reece James, real shame, because he'd probably been England's best player against Denmark before that, but given that England have had various problems with discipline on and off the field lately, that's not going to curry much favour with Gareth Southgate, you wouldn't think.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I must caveat all of this by saying that I didn't watch the game. I've not watched a minute of international football this week or last, because I can't bring myself to care about the Nations League right now, and I don't really think international football should be happening at all. Having said all of that, I did see the highlights of Reece James' performance. It didn't surprise me at all that he would offer as much as he did, particularly going forward with his crossing threat. The red card, I'm actually slightly encouraged, because Reece James is one of the quietest people, character-wise, that I've encountered at Chelsea. So I'm quite encouraged that he's got that kind of steel to him to go and confront the ref. Obviously not the best directing of that energy, but that's all part of a young player learning. And within the wider context of England, yeah, it's probably indicative of bigger issues that Gareth Southgate has to solve. But I don't think it's much for Reece James to worry about long term, and I don't think it's much for Chelsea to worry about long term.
I think it showed, not that I'm one for ref bashing, but I think it showed just how bad that referee was, that he got Reece James to come out and have a pop at him, because, as Liam said, he's not the loudest member of the Chelsea or and undoubtedly England squad, but yeah, that referee managed to fire him up, which I have to say was probably deserved given the kind of decisions that were given that night.
While we're on Chelsea and England, full-backs Ben Chilwell left the camp early due to injury. Here's Bassman93 tweeting to ask, is Chilwell going to continue suffering with his heel? My mum had a similar issue and it's fairly chronic. Simon, you're our Ben Chilwell correspondent. This isn't expected to keep him out for too long, is it?
No. And the hope is, and I've already written a piece with a bit of team news involved, and that the hope is that he should be fine to face Southampton, which gives the impression that It was precautionary. He didn't exactly have the most enjoyable international break for one reason or another. It didn't start too well due to that party that shouldn't have been attended. And then he fell ill. But I think perhaps, you know, there was a twinge or two, and it thought it was best for him to go back to Chelsea. But yeah, I'm very much under the impression that as things stand, he could be featuring against Southampton. So I wouldn't worry too much at the moment. But yeah, it's obviously not good after being out for so long with a certain injury that there's any twinge still going on there. But if he plays like he did against Crystal Palace, then he can't be troubling in too much.
Away from England, Kai Havertz and Timo Werner both on target in Germany's 3-3 draw with Switzerland on Tuesday. Tony Rudiger started that too. Hakim Ziyech made his return from the injury he sustained in pre-season. He featured for Morocco in their friendly win against Senegal. More on him shortly. Edouard Mendy picked up a thigh injury whilst away with Senegal. He's a doubt for Saturday's game against Southampton. Thiago Silva played 90 minutes for Brazil in their draw with Peru. Whether that means he'll be able to feature at the weekend, we'll wait and see. Finally, on internationals, here's a tweet from James, who opines Giroud's performance against Ukraine certainly put him back in the mix if Frank insists on playing Werner on the left. Simon, you've written for The Athletic on why you should never write Giroud off. I feel like we've been here before. Do you think there's any chance that he could be a starter for Chelsea in the next couple of weeks?
Well, yeah, given that the fixture list is pretty intense, I think it's 7 games in 22 days. And also, you know, he's the kind of guy that, as we've seen already a few times in the Chelsea shirt, that when he seems to be out of favour, he does come back in and prove himself very hard to get rid of. I think Lampard has sort of gone back to sort of looking at Tammy Abraham and that pace combined with that little combination with Havertz in the League Cup against Barnsley, that looked quite promising. But I mean, the point of the piece as well was to sort of also ask the question: why is it that he's so trusted and plays for France no matter how well he plays, and yet for Arsenal and Chelsea, it's been a pretty consistent sort of constant battle to prove his worth. But the conclusion I came away with is that he just never quits. He's determined to always prove a point. He never gives up. And that's something that Lampard, I think, really has come to appreciate. It's taken a bit of time, but I think Lampard himself has sort of values him as a member of that squad, whether he's in the team or not. He was actually quoted on the official website a week or two ago, talking about how he was roaring encouragement for Tammy Abraham from behind him in the dugout. And I think that's sort of a measure of the man. But I'm sure he will play a lot because he's just too good to ignore.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So, Saturday, 3 p.m, Chelsea back at the Bridge. You can pay £15 to watch the game against Southampton on pay-per-view. Not sure many people will be doing that. We've been teasing this team news piece that you've put up as we record on Thursday, Simon. Adash wants to know, will we finally see the Fab Four of Pulisic, Ziyech, Havertz and Werner starting together? Sounds like there's a good chance we might.
It's possible. I mean, the most interesting thing is Ziyech is looking like he will feature. He's definitely being lined up for either a bench role, coming off the bench, presumably depending on the scoreline. You know, may take the safe option and Chelsea might have to be in the lead comfortably, or for him to come on, depends what's going on. But a start hasn't been ruled out, although it's unlikely he will be able to play the full 90, because you've got to bear in mind he's barely played since March. There's not been much football in his legs, so match fitness is the main concern. But encouragingly, of course, there was a hint of it with him being able to come on as a sub for Morocco. He is sort of finally ready to play for Chelsea, and fans will undoubtedly be excited at the prospect of Ziyech playing on the right flank with perhaps Reece James behind. I mean, what a right flank that will be in terms of crosses into the box. I'm sure the likes of Giroud and Abraham and Werner at the back post will be very excited at the prospect of getting on the end of those. But as for the other players, I mean, Pulisic came on, didn't he, sort of late on against Crystal Palace. You'd sort of think that he's had a bit more time to get even fitter. It's getting very, very close now to all the new signings and all the injured players sort of getting in the team, and then we can finally judge just how good Chelsea are.
Simon mentions injured players there. We said that Mendy unlikely to play in goal this weekend. Here's a tweet from Andrew who asks, with Kepa starting in goal, how many changes would you make to protect him? Go uber conservative with five at the back and Jorginho, Kovacic and Kante starting to shield the defence. Liam, before we came on air, I was reading your piece about Kepa and his performance over the international break, and it gave me some reason for encouragement. Maybe this is the start of the Kepa revival.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's if things had broken differently in that game against Portugal, he could have conceded three times without doing anything differently. They hit the bar twice and João Félix missed from a yard out. So it's baby steps, really, with Kepa. He did show positive signs, particularly coming off his line at set pieces, and he made one nice save in a one-on-one situation from Félix in that game. He was then rotated out for David De Gea for the two Nations League games. So De Gea is Spain's number one again under Luis Enrique. But Mendy's injury, while we understand that it's not serious, it does provide maybe the glimpse of a second chance for Kepa a little bit sooner than I'm sure he would have anticipated. I think that he was probably looking at the situation thinking it was pretty gloomy towards the end of the transfer window. I think they were looking at possible loan options and then stopped when they realised there weren't any. so until January, he's got to try and battle this out and get his confidence back and try to show what he's capable of again. I don't see Lampard making big tactical changes if Kepa's in the team, because Lampard wants his team to play the way he wants them to play. I don't think he's going to completely abandon particularly the attacking half of his game plan just because he doesn't trust his goalkeeper. At that point, he'd probably just play Caballero. So I still expected an attack-minded Chelsea team, and it'll be up to Kepa to play better in the big moments and also more generally project a bit more confidence to the defenders in front of him.
Don, whether it's Kepa or Caballero in goal, this Southampton game is going to be a good measuring post, isn't it, to see how far Chelsea have come from last season, because they lost this fixture last term and it was this kind of opposition that they stumbled against regularly.
Yeah, and they're coming up against a team that's found a bit of form. They had two successive wins just prior to the international break and two clean sheets en route. So it is a test. And you sort of want, ideally, the players in front of now going to be Kepa to be very similar to those that finished the game and were so impressive against Crystal Palace. And I guess much will depend on how Thiago Silva comes back from Peru, and you know whether that's been an exhausting trip for him on international duty with Brazil, because you'd want him and Kurt Zouma at the heart of your defence, I'd suggest, just to provide that solidity and that consistency at the back. We need to start seeing some sort of similar teams played in successive games, I'd imagine, albeit Frank Lampard's obviously got Sevilla also to think about for next week. But it will be a test. It's going to be a test to prize open stubborn opponents, but opponents who do pose a threat as well, obviously Danny Ings, who had such a wonderful season last year. But they've got paces there in there as well. Gineppo looks a good player now. Nathan Redmond off the bench in the last few games. And they've got pace at fullback as well. So it's, yeah, it'll be a proper test, far more of a test, I imagine, of Chelsea's defence than Palace posed a few weeks back.
It's going to be an interesting game. We'll react to it in next week's show. We've also got the Champions League on the horizon. Chelsea kicking off their campaign on Tuesday with Sevilla visiting Stamford Bridge. We'll look ahead to that next.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX, stream on Hulu.
They are the best teams. They are the best teams. The main event, the master, the best, the great teams, the champions, a big meeting, a great sporting event, the main event, the master, the best, the greatest team, the champions. They are the best. They are the best. These are the champions, the master, the best, the champions. Those, of course, the incredible, inaccurate lyrics of the Champions League theme tune, which will be heard echoing around Stamford Bridge on Tuesday night as Chelsea welcome Sevilla in the Blues' first game in Group A, in the Blues' first game in Group E, where they are also joined by Krasnodar and Rennes. Liam, I know football's not played on paper, as Brian Clough once said, but it's fair to say that this is a far easier looking group stage draw than last season's, which was a group of death, really.
First of all, I'll just compliment you on that, Matt. That was spine tingling.
Every year when the Champions League rolls round, I always really look forward to reading the lyrics again. They are so moving.
Fourth versus fourth.
And it's live.
Yeah, I mean, my first thought when looking at Chelsea's Champions League group was that it was a jumped-up Europa League group, particularly with the presence of Sevilla. And I made the joke that it might be even easier for Chelsea because Sevilla would be gunning for third place to set up their grand title defence.
Did anyone laugh?
No one. Twitter is the harshest audience. It brings pressure in its own way on Lampard, because I think there's no excuse really for Chelsea not to qualify from this group. But more than that, it's probably a fair bit of pressure for them to top the group, given how much they've spent and the fact that Sevilla have quite a bit of turnover every year and have never really been seen as a established Champions League club. It's also a little bit dangerous as well, I think, partly because of where the group stage falls in the season calendar. You know, we've spoken at length about how Chelsea are still kind of finding their way as a squad, as a team, with all these new players still bedding people in and getting everyone up to the same level of fitness. And so these first couple of group games, Sevilla at home, Krasnodar away, are going to be quite tricky. And they particularly the Krasnodar away game as well comes between difficult Premier League games, away at Manchester United and away at Burnley. So navigating the schedule will be a challenge for Lampard. He's got no shortage of bodies with which to do it. We saw last year how much more complicated losing to Valencia made things on match day one. And Chelsea managed to battle through that with that amazing win in Amsterdam against Ajax and get through the group. But I'm sure they'll want a more straightforward path this time around.
Simon, that was going to be my next question, actually. Lessons learned. We're talking about Southampton in that regard and seeing if Chelsea have progressed. Similar thing here, I guess. Lost a Spanish opposition at home on match day one. And as Liam said, left themselves in a sticky situation thereafter. So that will still be resonating fairly loudly in the eardrums of the Chelsea players, I guess.
For sure. I mean, this is, apart from Sevilla away, you know, this is the toughest game in the group, if that makes sense. I mean, starting with home game, that obviously helps. But Sevilla are a very good side. You know, they made life a little bit difficult for Bayern Munich in the UEFA Super Cup final. They're blessed with talent. Of course, they've lost a few players from the team that won the Europa League. But you know, there's still players there that Premier League clubs have been sort of considering buying, like the centre backs, like Jules Koundé, Up front, you've got Campos, Luc de Jong, etc. So this is going to be difficult. And Chelsea and Lampard will be under pressure to make it far more easier going than they did last season. But if they get off to a win, then it's, you would imagine it's smooth sailing from there. But it's just getting that first victory on the board. But I would still expect that Chelsea and Sevilla will be the two teams to progress.
It says everything about how strong Sevilla are. That Barcelona actually celebrated with some gusto getting a 1-1 draw at Camp Nou against them just before the international break. Ronald Koeman actually took that as a positive sign for Barcelona, dropping points at home to Sevilla. They've lost one game in 26, stretching back to February, albeit, you know, obviously the COVID situation has influenced that. But they've got quality, as Simon says, up and down the spine of their team. Jordan and Fernando, Suso, Usama Idrissi did wonderful things at AZ Alkmaar and was touted around Europe, and Sevilla were the team that took the plunge and got him this summer. They will pose a real threat to Chelsea. And I think it's a really, really difficult start for Chelsea, to be honest.
Yeah, certainly they need a better result than they got last year. As Dom mentioned, Sevilla pretty good in the league before this weekend. 1-2 of their opening three, and that draw with Barcelona as well. It's an 8 p.m. kickoff at the Bridge on Tuesday night for that one. Elsewhere, the women's team earned a terrific 3-1 win against their big rivals Manchester City last weekend, thanks to goals from Maren Mielder, Sam Kerr and Fran Kirby. Michael Cox has written about that game for The Athletic, specifically focusing on Kirby and Erin Cuthbert. The match against Aston Villa this weekend, they've been postponed. Villa have had a player test positive for COVID. Meanwhile, you can see the Chelsea development squad take on Derby at noon on Saturday on the Chelsea website and app. Ian Maatsen won't be featuring in that one, though. The Dutch defender has this week joined League One Charlton on loan for the rest of the season. That's just about it for today. Let's hear what the chaps have been working on for Athletic readers to enjoy, though. Liam, we touched on that Kepa piece. What else has been in your in-tray this week?
Yeah, so that Kepa piece is available for subscribers to read right now, but I'm also working on a piece about Saeed Benrahma, only really tangentially related to Chelsea now. They did look at him for a while, but he was never top of their list for attacking reinforcements, and now he looks very much to be heading elsewhere in the Premier League, elsewhere in London, to West Ham. So I've dug into a little bit of his background and his journey.
Dom, I enjoyed your sit down with Sol Campbell about how to make sense of Premier League defending this season. What else have you been working on?
I'm working on a piece on one of Chelsea's future opponents in the Champions League, the French club Stade Rennais, who are making their debut in the competition after finishing third in a truncated season last time round. Should be quite interesting. Julien Stéphane has done an incredible job in Brittany with them, a team which includes the 17-year-old sensation Camavinga, who I think most clubs in Europe would love to get their hands on, but also the young Belgian talent Jeremy Doku as well. So I think they'll pose a threat further down the line to clubs like Chelsea.
Yeah, Camavinga, definitely one to watch in the future. Simon, your output has been prolific in recent weeks. What have you got in the pipeline for Athletic subscribers to enjoy?
Well, there's a different kind of piece that I've worked with Jack Pickbrook on, and that's a piece on the pressure of being England's number one goalkeeper. I provided the Rob Green element to it. No surprises there, given I've spoken to him a few times. But Jack's done a really good piece of knitting it all together, because, of course, a lot of talk about Jordan Pickford's position right now. But it's just sort of painting the picture of just how difficult it is to be England's number one, where your every move is scrutinised. As for the next piece in the pipeline, I talked about it last week, but it's now sort of finally being brought to fruition, and it's the answering the question, do you need an ex-defender to help coach a good defence? And both Liam and Dom have helped provide some of the voices for that piece, which hopefully will be running in the next few days.
Excellent. Look forward to reading it. Remember, you can subscribe to The Athletic for just £1 a month by visiting theathletic.com/ChelseaPod. My thanks to Liam, to Dom and to Simon for joining me today, and to producer Adonis, and to you two, listener. We'll do it all again next week. But for now, it's goodbye.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.